step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Offstage and On the Air, performance number 621. I am a very hot Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by my even hotter co-host, Miss Nicole Shiro.
Hello, it's a little steam heat today.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby, streaming live at koop.org. During this pandemic, we are homegrown and pre-recorded. Stay on this dial.
Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up, feast your eyes on the wonders of this world.
Since you've seen a live show or a play, you cry in the terrible sourdough starter you made to get by.
We've gone mad.
Remember, we've been in containment for hundreds of days.
But it's not all bad.
In September, for your entertainment, Broadway's back.
It is Wednesday, June 16th, 2021. On the show today, we talk to Tori Laws Phillips of Cold Town Theater for everything improv and everything Cold Town. Of course, we will have news and views of the world of theater in Washington Heights, in New Jersey, and in To Kill a Mockingbird. Stick with us.
Your pet plants are safe inside their rooms.
Won't you please come with us?
There is life beyond your friends at Netflix, Hulu, Peacock, Disney Plus.
La da da da.
All right, Broadway's coming back.
It is. It
that
is.
Was a fun video. I mean, everybody just heard the audio of it. It is a YouTube video, everybody, from Jimmy Fallon. And you'll find a link to that on offstageonair.com. And that was just the ending part. There's a whole piece of original music that Lin-Manuel Miranda and Jimmy Fallon do prior to that section.
Yeah, and It's emotionally awesome.
It is emotionally awesome. And since you didn't see it, you were just hearing voices. Some of the other voices you heard were Jimmy Smits, Christopher Jackson,
Felicia Rashad, Kristen Chenoweth. Oh my gosh, I can't think of her name, but Abuelito Claudia, the original from Broadway, not just in the movie. And Laura Benanti.
Wait a second. Are you saying that actor was the original from Broadway?
I'm pretty sure she was. Yeah, I think she was the only cast member playing the role again.
I did not know that.
I'm pretty sure. I'm 98% sure. She was in it at some point on Broadway, but I'm pretty sure she's the original one.
Her name is Olga Mereditz.
Thank you.
And perhaps we will fact check that at some point during our show today, because I would love to know that. I did not realize that.
I have our fact checkers, the fact checking department, on it right now.
Excellent. Well, it was really good. Broadway's coming back. This was a fun video. I would encourage folks to go to offstageonair.com and click on that link and watch the whole thing. It's so much fun.
She got a Tony nom for her performance in the Broadway production also.
She must have been young.
Yeah, yeah. She is.
Because that was 2000.
Look at how young she looked in just right now without all the Abuela Claudia makeup.
Well, that's what I'm saying. It's 2008. So that was, wow. I'm surprised. And I do, you know, we talked about this a little bit when we watched the movie together, that Zach's version, which was wonderful here. I forgot who played Abuela Claudia, but that person was way too young, in my opinion.
She's 65 currently.
Yeah. That's...
So yeah, she was younger than me when she.
Yeah. But right? I was just talking about the Zach person. So I don't want to confuse people that the person that Nicole's just talking about was a person from the film, not that the person I was just talking about. So who I'm assuming is not 65. So we saw In the Heights together, and I have to say that they could probably trim a half hour off of it and I wouldn't complain. It was a little long.
I'm shaking my head in agreement.
And I was slightly disappointed after we watched it together. But when I went back and watched it again, I actually kind of love it. I think it's.
I kept yelling out things during the movie with influences from music sounds and performers at the time to. That's supposed to be Berkeley. That's Billy Wilder. It really took old. And then I read this article and he was like, I was honoring Busby Berkeley. I'm like, buddy, I saw it. It was a total love to old school Hollywood musicals with modern liberties because.
Well, and I will. So that they threw in animations, which were kind of fun, which sort of is a callback to things, Disney things like Mary Poppins, where live action and animation goes together. I think there was a lot of callbacks to other genres. I will say that to me, the most striking thing on this were the performances.
They really were.
Which were really wonderful. And there were people that I didn't know. The woman that played Vanessa is Melissa Barrera, who it took me a while to warm up to her, but I did. I liked her a lot. The woman that played Nina, Leslie Grace, was wonderful. And of course, you had some callbacks. Lin-Manuel Miranda played the Piragua guy.
And the gentleman who played Benny, hands down, killed it. And apparently
amazing. His name is Corey Hawkins, and he was truly amazing and worth seeing. Jimmy Smits as Kevin
Jimmy
Rosario.
Smits just makes me smile. Daphne and Ruba Vega, I was so excited to see her again, like doing her thing and loving it.
You don't see her much. For folks that don't know, she was the original Mimi in Rent.
She did things for a while because she was in the one version of the Wild Party. Like I kept seeing her and then mm-hmm. It was like, we didn't for a while. I think the Rent reunion recently was the last thing I really saw her. You know, she's good.
She is. And we didn't talk about, and we should, the star of the show is Anthony Ramos, who folks will recognize from Hamilton as playing John Lawrence and Philip Schuyler. Philip Hamilton, I guess. They never talk about his last name. It would be Hamilton.
I guess so.
It's crazy. But he did an amazing job as well. I think you and I both agree there was a conceit in it, and it doesn't give anything away to say that he's telling this as a story in the past to a group of children on the beach in the Dominican Republic. I'll just leave it at that.
I would have cut out all the time if they didn't do that. And if they hadn't.
Ending. Well, we don't want to give anything away. So just that conceit, I think they could have lived without.
Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that would have been our time cut.
And then there were other performances that were they were really wonderful and surprising. Two of them for me was Stephanie Beatrix and Dasha Polanco, who played two of the salon Edition, girls.
Salon.
And Stephanie Beatrix, people will know from Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
She was great.
As the tough character. And here she plays this girly girl salon woman, and Dasha Polanco was in Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. And I just love that. And then, of course, you can't forget, name before the title, I believe, in the credits, was it Mark Anthony for his one scene?
Casey's like, here comes Mark Anthony. He likes to show up and do a scene. Well, he also wrote an original song. So I wonder if the deal was, I'll write a song, let me do a scene.
Yeah, and the song was played in the credits. And then the last person I'll talk about was one Patrick Page, former guest of us.
Christopher Jackson and Patrick Page were my two favorite pop-ups in it.
Right. Well, Christopher Jackson, I did forget to mention him. He played the...
Mr. Softy Man.
Mr. Softy, which was not in the play. Neither was Patrick Page's character who runs the dry cleaners. And they were both in there. Just, I really like it. And I'll probably see it one more time before it disappears.
I just love seeing people on the streets of New York. And I will say this, you and I need to comment when we were watching the credits, both of our mouths dropped at the amount of dancers employed. It had to be four or five screenshots. They were scrolling and scrolling. And that was just so exciting to see that amount of dancing credits, like
true
performing credits.
And I actually, when I watched it the second time, and actually, if I were to be truly honest, I watched the opening a third time, but I was scouring the back ends of the dancers just to see if that's where all the weak ones were. And I didn't really see any. So they were all really strong dancers. I thought maybe. So now also, I believe they've employed the most Latinx actors ever in humanity for this show.
I mean, I would say that has to be, look, especially looking at the amount of people in the cast and credits, like.
Yeah. Pretty amazing piece. And I
enjoyed it. I mean, I've always loved that musical. I think that's, you really just, you know, this is a man who wrote this in college. And that's when you go, this is one of the creative few that like, yeah, is just pure genius.
And I do kind of enjoy the inaccuracies of Aries, you know. So as you know, I lived in the Washington Heights for 11 years. Now I lived at 162nd Street, and the center of this action takes place at 175th and Audubon, which was about 12 blocks from where I was. So admittedly, it's pretty far away. But part of the lyrics in the song and in the video showed an elevated train. And I don't know of an elevated train in Washington Heights. The one train goes elevated, but it goes elevated right before it leaves Manhattan and goes into the Bronx up at like 215.
Well, the one time there was an elevated train, I said to you, she's meeting her dad to eat dinner, and they could have been outside of where they were. I mean, you do leave your neighborhood sometimes to go eat somewhere.
No, but but if you said Vanessa's song talks about the elevated train. So they are stating that there's an elevated train in Washington Heights. And I get it. It's romantic, but it's fun to watch that as someone that knows and says that's not accurate. But what I found amazing, again, having lived in Washington Heights for as long as I did, the swimming pool scene, I was assuming that swimming pool was somewhere else, but it wasn't. It was in Washington Heights, and it stayed open during the filming, and they had to work around the swimming pool schedule to film it, which I think is amazing.
It's so cool. It's a really powerful, it's one of those great Busby Berkeley moments. It's a great, great number. I enjoyed that a lot.
Me too. Well, that's in the Heights. I'm going to talk about a couple of other things that I saw virtually online that others can see if they want before we go to break. So I looked at a couple of things. One was Brooklyn the Musical, which is a show that I had the music from. I'd never seen it before. And it's a show within a show. Did you happen to see it? It's playing on Broadway HD.
No, I watched Time Bandits instead, which I think they need to make a musical. And had Patrick Page star as Evil.
Okay, there you go. Wonderful non sequitur. We'll see about making that happen. But Brooklyn, the musical the music is beautiful. It's a show within a show. It's a group of people experiencing homelessness that do a show about basically it's a fairy tale about a young girl searching for her father who ends up being a junkie. Blah blah blah. This was a very stylized production. It was done. It was shot in the days of COVID. And I went back and forth watching it saying, I like it. I don't like it. I like it. I don't like it. So I don't really.
Where are you now today on it?
I think I liked it. Generally speaking, I did not love it.
Okay.
But it's an interesting take on it. And I would encourage folks to go to Broadway HD, watch it, and send us a note if you disagree or agree. I think it'd be interesting to have a conversation around it.
That'd be cool.
But it tells a story about you don't know who that person is in the story within a story, or not the story within the story outside of the story. You don't really know who that person is that's asking you for help on the street. And you don't know what their story is, and you don't know why they're there. And it's a good way for us to understand the humanity of people experiencing homelessness.
When was it originally done in New York? Was it 2018, right? It's somewhat relatively new, correct?
I think it was earlier than that, but I'm going to look it up right as we speak.
You're going to have, boy, our fact-checking department is busy today.
It's working. It's working really, really hard. So the first production on Broadway, 2006.
Oh, that's older than I thought.
Yeah. 2006 was when it first started. 2008. Somewhere in here, I'm sure it says where it happened on Broadway, but I believe it was 2008 at the 14th Street Theater. I don't know that it played Broadway.
Got it. Oh, that was right over by one of my apartments.
There you go. So that's that. The other thing that I saw also on Broadway HD was a new production in our COVID times of Title of Show. Now, Title of Show, folks will know, we've talked about it on the show before, was created for the New York Theater Musical Festival. It's meta upon meta upon meta, because it's about a...
What is it again, Lisa?
It's a lot of meta. It's about a group of people making a show for the New York Musical Theater Festival. And I think it played off Broadway eventually.
I think it was off Broadway eventually too. Yes.
So this is another thing that I knew the music from. And then I finally saw a production of it here in Austin, and I don't remember who, which is probably a good thing, but I wasn't crazy about it. I thought it was, I didn't like it a lot. And I kind of blamed it on the theater in Austin. But now that I saw this version done with professional people, I kind of blame it on the show.
You know, it's okay. I've discovered I don't need to like a musical, and I can still love all the music from the show and appreciate the music. And I can still appreciate what the show context and story is about and go, that's so great, and not like the musical. And it's okay.
Yeah. So
Rodgers and Hammerstein and I, we've had that conversation. I've come to terms with it.
We have. But I might look at it again to see if because I do change my mind at other glances. I tend to be hypercritical. But I do remember with this particular one, I don't know if I was even able to watch the entire thing. So I apologize to the Title of Show people.
But you still like the music. So I mean,
I do.
That they did something right, if you're still stirred to put it on.
I do indeed. To Kill a Mockingbird is coming back, it announced, which is not news. But what is news is that it is coming back with its original stars. Oh my God, Jeff.
Oh my gosh. Now I see him and I can't think of his Daniels.
Jeff Daniels and what's her name? Celia
Keenan-Bolger.
And it is not coming back with its lead producer.
You forgot Gideon Glick. Isn't Gideon Glick in the original cast?
I don't know. The article didn't mention Gideon Glick.
Oh, he's in the original, so that's kind of sad.
Well, I was talking about the original lead, the two major leads, so I don't know. But I can look at it as we go. It doesn't say anything about Gideon Glick. So it is not coming back, though, with its original lead producer, who is one Scott Rudin.
One Scott Rudin.
Thankfully, I almost forgot his name. It's going to be overseen by Orin Wolf. He was the lead producer on The Band's Visit. And he does networks. He's one of the networks is one of the touring companies that tours the Broadway shows. He has not talked to Scott Rudin at all. Scott Rudin is not involved and will not be receiving any financial gains from this new version. So that's good.
Yeah, I think they took him out of all that, out of everything.
Mm-hmm. But you can read an article in the New York Times about it. It will get further and clarification about the rest of the cast at offstageonair.com. There's a link to that. Again, I wasn't surprised that it was coming back, but I am surprised that the two stars are coming back in their lead roles. But I will say this, that's probably necessary. It had already shifted the odds. Normally a straight play, which is a play that's not a musical, doesn't run that long on Broadway, as long as To Kill a Mockingbird did. And so I think it's a good idea to bring them back, at least to open it up so that they can get their audience back and hopefully we'll have longevity. Okay. The next thing I want to talk about is the SVOG grants. Interestingly enough, so we've talked about this on this is the Shuttered Venue Operators grant that the SBA is administering. It's some several billion dollars. It's part of the Save Our Stages Act. They have been really slow to give out this money. They have only awarded of the 14.
It's been a hot mess, from the system crashing to taking applications to getting them equal payments. It's
of the 14,000 applications, only 90 have been processed so far. I will say, at a average of a little over $1 million each. I think it's interesting. But what I did not know was it is such a mess that the leadership of the people administering this from the Small Business Administration were fired, and they've re-brought other people in. It has been a mess from
start to finish. It's a hot mess. That's why I started laughing. I was like, hot mess is the only way to describe it.
So as someone that is hopefully one of the many beneficiaries of that grant here in Austin, I don't know of any company or any theater in Austin that is in that list of people that have been received. It makes me really angry.
Yeah. And it's any single theater person I talk with and I hear SVOG, I just start to laugh because I'm like, what hot mess story does this person have? I mean, I know everyone's trying. I think it's great that it's out there, but it's a hot mess.
Yeah. To me, it's like, how hard is it to give out the money? They have already said that they have less applicants than they expected. They have said that if you have applied and if you qualify, you will get that money. But it's like, so in that case, why not just look at the darn applications and write a check?
I don't know, because I again, hot mess.
So there's a couple of other articles that will be linked on our show that we really don't have the time to talk about.
One of the orchestra performing in the dark for the dark that I sent you over in England? We need to post that article. It's fascinating that there are the whole orchestra plus the whole performance. Everything is in the dark. Even the players playing their instruments have sleep masks on, and they're kicking off this tour. It's this Icelandic group. I just found it fascinating.
Sounds fascinating. It sounds like something I don't want to go to, though.
That's what it sounded like to me, but yet I couldn't stop. Found it fascinating.
Awesome. Well, you can see that article on offstageonair.com. Also, there's an article in the Telegraph in London, the title of which is "London's West End is Sleepwalking into Oblivion. The Government Must Wake Up." It's written by Sonia Friedman, who is the producer of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, which they allowed to open at full capacity and then shut it down. So it's a very interesting article saying that the government isn't playing fair with the theater companies.
Well, Lloyd Webber is now going to be, he said he's suing the government, and now he's like, I'm opening up, arrest me. And he's actually been talking to a lot of other producers. I think she was one of them, and talking to people, and they're trying to figure it out because they did just move everything back, I think, as of yesterday.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a break. And we will listen to a song from title of show as we go off to break. And we'll see you after that when we come to the second half of the show.
A, D, 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 F sharp, A will be the first notes of our show.
We'll start with the seed of an idea, then plant it onto paper with a Dixon Ticonderoga, and then watch it sprout into a musical. And then we'll help.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with Lisa
and Nicole.
And as you might remember, we are pre-recorded, and you can catch us on koop.org as well as offstageonair.com. So we just listened to the opening number from title of show. I think that's all we need to say about that.
That's cool.
So I want to talk about a couple of things before we bring on our guest. I don't know if this breaks your heart, but it breaks mine. Zoe's great playlist was canceled.
Yeah, it does break my heart. I have to tell you, and I just saw him on something else, but S. Newell, I can't get enough.
Of?
Alex Newell.
Oh, Alex Newell. Yeah, you broke up. We didn't hear
oh,
that.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Alex Newell is great. And I don't know which pronouns they use, because in the show they use male pronouns. But I don't know what pronouns. So
I just saw an interview with him, and he was using male pronouns. It's the only reason why I went with it still here.
Cool. Good. Well, that is good. So I don't know if you remember what's his name? NRA guy. Anyway, Clint Eastwood directed a version of Jersey Boys,
which he did that movie version, didn't he?
Which I did not like. Yes. But there's going to be another Jersey Boys movie that was just confirmed by Frankie Valli, and it's going to star Nick Jonas.
Oh, I'm not surprised, because didn't he have Nick doing it on Broadway also?
I think so.
Mm-hmm. And it's coming back to Broadway again, too. So, I mean, that does not surprise me.
Well, I hope it's more theatrical, and I hope I like it more than the Clint Eastwood version, because
I'm going to say with Nick Jonas, not just because of Nick Jonas, but he's embraced theater so much. And after the Les Mis and now the Jersey Boys, I think it will take more of that angle to it and not be the
I hope you're right. So I found this sort of fun too. So Jackie Hoffman, who starred, who doesn't
love her.
If you don't know her by name, you would know her by sight. She's very recognizable. She was Fruma Sarah in the Yiddish version, not Fruma Sarah. She played Yenta in the Yiddish version of Fiddler on the Roof. So she's doing a new off-Broadway play called Fruma Sarah, parentheses, Waiting in the Wings. And it is about a woman playing Fruma Sarah, and she's waiting. She is strapped up in the fly loft, waiting to enter as Fruma Sarah. And it just sounds like so much fun.
OMG. OMG. Do you know the other thing people may really recognize her from? She was the original gym teacher in Hairspray the Musical.
Okay. So I'll just read this blurb from Playbill. It says the character's name is Ariana Russo. She sits backstage awaiting her entrance as Fruma Sarah, tethered to the fly system overhead. She prepares to navigate her hour-long exile to stage left alone when she meets Margot, a feisty substitute fly captain for the night. Set in real time, while a production of Fiddler is happening on stage, the weight begins to wear on Ariana, exposing the deep cracks in her facade.
Can we do this show? It sounds like a two-person show that you and I need to be doing.
So,
this, oh my gosh, I'm crying right now. I'm laughing so hard at all the thought of this. Oh, this so is so what I needed.
Playing at a theater called The Cell in New York.
I want to see that.
Doesn't it sound, I knew you would love it.
Oh my gosh, there needs to be B-roll of something of that show. I cried in my glasses. I'm laughing so hard.
I love that you love it. I do have to say, we do have one death that we want to talk about, and that's Ned Beatty passed away.
Oh yeah, that was sad.
Yeah, he was
83,
passed away of natural causes. So we can celebrate his time on this earth. He's mostly known for television and film, but he did have two stints on Broadway. One in 1968 with The Great White Hope. And he starred as Big Daddy in Cat on a Hot Tin Roof in 2003.
I was about to say, didn't you play Big Daddy? Because that's why I was like, oh, he's had Broadway, because I remember him recently. Yeah. I would have loved to see him play that. He'd be interesting.
Yeah. So some of his more popular movies he did that people would know are All the President's Men, Superman, Rudy, and Back to School. And there will be a link to his New York Times obituary if you want to learn more about him.
I mean, didn't he become famous for Deliverance?
I don't know. Yes. He was one of the, oh, was he one? He was.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I only saw Deliverance once. I will never see it again.
Yeah. You don't need to see it more than once.
But that scene gets played a lot.
Yeah.
We won't go anything around that. Although pigs are introduced.
But yeah, I think that was what made him, people look at him as a versatile actor and went, whoa.
Yep. All right.
What a career.
Like, let's, yeah, truly. Well, he will be missed. Let's jump to our interview with Tori Laws Phillips of Coal Town Theater. It was a wonderful interview.
It was.
And we spoke to her yesterday on Sunday for us. It will be Sunday for you as you're listening to this, but for us, it was yesterday. For you, it was 4 days ago. It's interesting. So let's go and listen to that interview, shall we?
Let's.
I love to laugh loud and long and clear. I love to laugh. It's getting worse every year. The more I laugh, the more I fill with glee. And the more the glee, the more I'm a merrier me.
I love to laugh. Ha 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 ha. Loud and long and clear. Well, that's actually a hint that of our next guest. We have Julie Andrews joining us. Just kidding.
I would die. I wouldn't be able to see anything.
I have a veteran of the show, Tori Laws Phillips of Coal Town Theater. Hi, Tori.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
I realize, of course, that Coal Town Theater, being an improv company, I think it's clear to understand that improv isn't necessarily comedy.
Correct. Very correct. We often are bending that rule of thinking that it's about laughter. A number of the shows that we put on are really to bend those rules and to really go after seeking truth and stories and simply make them up on this on the spot and hope that you don't laugh at the awkward parts.
Yeah, which is
when I
studied improv, I mean, it was the rule was, you know, don't go for the laugh, go for the honesty, and the laugh, if it's there, will come. Well, that's great. So you joined the management team, the ownership team of Coaltown in 2020, last year during COVID-19.
Yeah.
Now, I think, well, y'all had such a great space on Airport Boulevard and it was very visible and lots of people probably saw it. If they didn't know who you were, they probably heard of you, but you no longer have that space.
We no longer have that space. Wonderful family that was renting the property was able to sell it. And it is now going to be what everything in Austin is, a brewery. and we were very lucky to have that space. We had a great relationship with our neighbors. We were neighbors to I Love Video and had a great relationship with them and really loved the neighborhood. But we will be close by. We have things in the hopper and hopefully
that's exciting.
Soon we'll be able to let the world know that we'll be close by and and we'll be great. Back in person where we've got things percolating.
Well, for those people that aren't familiar with Coaltown, mm-hmm. Tell us about it.
Coaltown is a 14-year-old improv theater that I like to think of us as sort of the counterculture weird improv comedy home in Austin, meaning that we are oftentimes, I think of myself as an owner as helping to provide a sandbox for people that make art. Our sandbox is a welcoming home for people who oftentimes feel different in lots of circles. So when I came along at Coaltown, I guess 7 years ago, 6 years ago, we were emerging a lot of people of color on stage and did some really interesting shows that suddenly were shows that weren't funny, that may have had bright spots of humor that were really seeking broadening horizons, and that developed a large number of Latina and Black artists, as well as a large number of Asian artists. And we sort of started cropping up these amazing troupes and amazing shows with all people of color casts, which for most of us, we had never had that opportunity. And so I didn't even know what I was missing. And I didn't know how hard I was working as a Black woman doing improv with a lot of white guys with, plaid shirts and glasses on. I didn't know how hard I was working until I didn't have to do improv with them. And we have a large group of improvisers that are members of the LGBTQIA community. And so we have a really awesome group of shows that fall under the Queer Town umbrella. And we're really happy about that. But we also have worked really, really hard at just creating a space where like all the wacky stuff can happen. So you can do we've had a night where we had a show that was a parody of Midsommar that I won't ruin the story for you, but it's gory. that movie that was followed by a sort of an improv drama that was taking on the idea of, oh gosh, the prison system and prison reform. So it's like those happen back to back, and or it could be a Bigfoot the musical. So we think of ourselves as the place for alternative comedy, and we do a lot of lessons and education and all of it.
That sounds amazing. I mean, I don't have to tell you that improv tends to be very white and very male. And so it's great that you, neither of those things, are in the ownership team of Coal Town. And Coal Town's always done some really great stuff. And and Austin, is one of the top improv cities. And up until just recently, we had 5 improv theaters. Now I guess we have 3, but sounds like we're going to get back up to 4, which is good. Boy, I had a question in there and then it just totally went away. So, but
I'll tell you that I think is really cool about us having 3 or 4 or 5 theaters here is coming from other cities. I like that Austin is theater agnostic. As owners, we all communicate really well. We're also all very go beyond pleasantries friendly. Like, we genuinely care for each other, and there's a lot of sharing of information. There's a lot of sharing of policies. There's also just a lot of really genuine joy for everybody's wins. So that's a really nice thing. Some cities are sort of set up where somebody doesn't like somebody, or, you know, students can't go back and forth, whereas here the community can be on any stage. So it's really,
sure,
really nice.
Yeah. And that is one of the really good things. I was very familiar. I was working with the Institution Theater, and during the Out of Bounds Festival, there's a big dinner that all the improvisers come to. And also, isn't there a Thanksgiving? I assume it took a break during COVID, but
it's, I think we only missed 1. I don't think we missed 2. I think some people did it this year.
That's great.
Yeah.
I think that's vital. And, the theater community is going through that now. It's taking us a little bit more time to learn that we're not competitors, that everybody's, that one theater success shows positively on other theaters. So, once again, improv on the crest of the wave, leading the way.
We do what we can.
So one of the things that I like to talk about whenever I have improvisers on here is the link between improvisation and business. And I think that, as someone who has done both and has experienced both, I think it's important to let people know about that link. And you guys have a program that works with businesses. Can you tell us about that?
Sure. To give you a little bit of my personal story, I was, when I started doing improv, I was working, I had a senior director title at an advertising agency. So I made more money than I probably should have at that point in my career, and managing way too much money at that point in my career. But I was, I had figured out I was pretty smart, but I was learning how to deal with people. And what improv gave me was it allowed me to let go of the insecurities that I brought into a workplace. And it taught me to be assertive and confident in a way that wasn't gross or judgmental or bitchy. And, ooh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. You're good. That's good. Yeah. Keep going.
Or you know, mean. And it allowed me to let go of a lot of that in a way that just, it also allowed me to just let go of the judgment part of it and to be really confident and happy and to work with other people in a way that I was super excited about their ideas and not looking for the holes in their ideas so that I could seem smarter, looking for ways that I could support them and we could work together better. And I think that it changed the entire trajectory of my career. It really allowed me to grow even faster and to develop in a way that was just really more true to myself and didn't get me stuck. And so it was the crack I needed to propel my career.
It's interesting. This is
honest. It's just, you have to be honest to me. Yeah. And that's what I love about it.
Yeah. And I didn't know this about you. So I love that you're coming from the other side and you're giving that perspective. Cause I oftentimes tell people the benefits that improv gives you from working as a team, thinking outside the box. I hate that term, but thinking differently. Yes. Anding is so important in business and all those things help. In every angle of business. That's good. And the last thing I want to talk about with regards to Coal Town is you're working with kids too, aren't you?
Yes. Excused absence comedy. Our Coal Town Kids sector has not gone anywhere. And thank God for Kristen Hinn. She's an actual angel. You have to look at the light just right to catch her halo. But she has kept both in-person, distanced, and online camps and classes. So I'm very happy. My kiddos will be doing camp this summer. And there are camps running all summer from the ages of 6 all the way up to 18. And that's another great thing is that improv is one of those, like, it's a great little gateway so kids can do it and they don't ever have to stop. There's no sort of like, well, sorry, Billy, you're only as good as you are and there's no more space for you. Billy, you could be a moderately smart, mediocre improviser for your whole life.
and that is my level. So I'm a Billy.
Yeah.
I am too.
Well, that is awesome. And so can you give us a hint as to when we might hear any kind of news about the future?
I think we should have news in, I'm hoping, the next 45 days or so.
Oh.
Yes, yeah, so moderately soon. We are doing jams and things like that. We've started classes again. So like the engines are rolling and that feels really nice. It's not just the online stuff. We're getting to see each other in person, which is amazing because we didn't think it would work online and then it worked really well online, but in person is still really amazing.
Excellent. Well, so the two last things I'll say is that when you come to when you get to ready to make some announcements, I feel that maybe you should make them on offstage and on the air. And two, where can folks go to get more information about the amazing stuff you guys do?
Coaltowntheater.com or the Coal Town Theater Facebook. If you're still Facebooking, and if you're not Facebooking, we're Instagrammable.
Excellent.
Yeah.
And we should say that theater is spelled the ER way. Not the correct way.
Of course, we have to be alternative and also make it hard on ourselves.
Awesome. Well, Tori Laws Phillips, thank you so much for coming on the show. I know you're super busy, so we're honored that you made time for us.
I appreciate you completely. Thank you.
Awesome. That was wonderful. Thank you, Tori Laws Phillips. I should tell folks, we did not talk about this here, but Tori is a... she's a trainer and she has a company that does equity, diversity, and inclusion. She has been doing programs for the theater community over the past several months through Austin Creative Alliance. And you can find information about those programs at austincreativealliance.org. I'm actually doing a program with her on EDI on this Wednesday. So,
excellent. Yeah. They also have them up on Now Playing Austin. They have they have a header at the top with all the programming and the training that they've been doing.
They do indeed. So if you just went to nowplayingaustin.com, you would see it right there. Well, that's it. 1 hour of Offstage and on the Air. Gone by the wayside.
Gone by the wayside.
So remember, check us out on the Facebooks. Check us out on the Twitters. Think about subscribing to us on Apple Podcasts.
Yeah. And you know what? Why not leave a comment? Everyone likes to leave comments. So just leave
a review. We have a whole bunch of them, but there's room for you. There's still room for you.
Tell us how awesome we are. We need to feed our egos.
Awesome. And a reminder, folks, this is Pride Month. So show your pride, wear your rainbow colors, add the brown shades to the rainbow, which is really important, as well as the lavender shades to the rainbow so that we can be all inclusive. Support LGBTQI+ theaters and institutions around the city.
Yeah, and I have to say that a lot of the media has done really good, great lists of everything happening Pride related. So it's really easy to Google and you'll find all these resources and lists of what's happening because there's a lot.
Google's a lot. So in honor of Daphne Rubin Vega, let's play something from Rent in celebration of Pride and in celebration of her. And this will be the, I don't know what the actual title is, the candle song that she sang.
Will You Light My Candle?
Will You Light My Candle? Bye, everybody.
What do you forget?
Got a light.
I know you're shivering.
It's nothing, they turned off my heat. And I'm just a little weak on my feet. Would you light my candle?